Hi, you guys. I'm Scott Lee. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to be glad to be here in about 10 minutes. It takes me a while to settle in. But I want to say thanks first to Karen for inviting me and for being such a fine hostess. And to the committee, thank you for all the work you did. Will, thank you for taking credit for all of their work. I like to open anything I do with a quotation from Lois Wilson. She was asked one time what she did in a moment of silence before the prayer, and she said, "I invite God to the meeting." That's powerful for me, and it's not that I don't believe God's here. I do believe that. But something special happens for me when I stop and honor that presence. So in a moment, I'm going to ask you to do that. Now, there may be somebody here who doesn't have a God, or you got here like I did, afraid there might be one. If that's your situation, let me recommend you borrow mine. I recommend him very highly. He's got a great sense of humor. And been keeping me sober for, since 28 June of 1984, I'm sober 39 years. That's a long time for a guy that only agreed to 28 days. So if you would, let's take a moment and literally invite God to the meeting, and I'll meet you back here. Amen. Yeah, thank you. I should tell you, among other disorders, I have something called essential tremors. I've got a shake in my hand, and occasionally I get a negative head shake like this, and I don't even know what's happening. So it's going to look like I disagree with what I'm saying. I don't. Now, I'm still learning. I may later. But if I say it tonight, I actually mean it. So don't trust a head shake. I said I was an alcoholic. And what that means to me is that alcohol was never my problem for a single second. It was my answer. And I'm a late bloomer. I didn't start drinking until I was 18 years old. I've lost track of the men I was sponsored. I got sober before they were 18, but I was 18. And I was in college going through fraternity rush, and fraternity boys went into a bar, and I followed them into the bar. They ordered a beer. I ordered the same brand of beer they did, strangely enough. And they start drinking this beer. I don't like the beer. I don't like the taste. I don't like the way the foam feels. I don't like anything about it except I'm doing it with them. And I'm hypervigilant. I'm watching them. And I'm drinking this beer at the same pace they are. As we approach the bottom, I'm thinking, let's pay these nice people and get out of here. And I didn't fly from Nashville, where it was -6 when I left home, to talk to you. I came to talk with you. So play with me. And they got toward the bottom of that first beer, and I ordered another beer. Can somebody give me a wild guess what I did? Another beer, right, of course. And by the time the second one hit bottom, I got the magic that all the alcoholics understand. And so we're going to do a show of hands. I got suddenly taller. Who got taller when they drank? Come on. Taller. How about better looking? Yeah, the pimples jump right off. Expert on many subjects. Right? I'm expert on subjects I never heard of and can't spell. Fantastic dancer. Yes, oh Lord, yes, we have dancers. Yeah, and gentlemen, now I can talk to the girls, right? Ladies, and you can stand to listen to that crap. Right? I mean, this is the magic juice. It works for every, I've been looking for this all my life. And I'd have paid a high price and did. And I chased it hard. Boy, I chased it hard. And I haven't even got to the big one. The biggest thing it did for me was all of a sudden, somewhere in the middle of that second beer, something deep inside me went, and it was okay to be Scott. It never had been. I became convinced as a very small boy that I was not good enough. Nothing I ever did could ever measure up. And I'm one of the defective ones. And I became an actor as a small boy. And the act is, I'm going to pretend to be the guy I think you want me to be. And use to find us whoever's in front of me right now, I'm a different guy to everybody. At the end of my drinking, I got a customer and went into my territory. It's a very religious guy. He knows a very religious Scott. Got a customer 50 miles from there. It's a Friday night party kind of guy. He does a Friday night party kind of Scott. Got the boys in the pool room where I buy my dope and drink my beer. They know that Scott. Neighbors, business partners, family members, everybody knows a different Scott. The greatest fear in my life, people from different parts of my life be at the same place, same time. How am I going to act? Because I'm acting all the time. If I'm awake, I'm on red alert, trying to hold up the right mask to keep you from seeing the real me. It takes a tremendous amount of energy. I don't know how much longer I could have done it. And 2 beers later, I was taller, smarter, better looking, and I transitioned from the fear that these guys would see who I really am and not want me in their fraternity. Transitioned from that to, these turkeys are awfully fortunate that a cool guy like Scott is here. Now, if you don't recognize that, that's an entire psychic change. It is. And I think that's why Dr. Silkworth says that's what I'm going to have to get on my alcoholism, because that's what it gave me, a badly deeded entire psychic change. I zipped through a 4-year college and 5 years in 2 summer schools. Come on, put them up. Where are they? Come on, extended. Come on, who was extended in education? Come on, I got a couple of hands. Okay. I joined the United States Air Force, in the second 6 months of pilot training, we flew the T-38, which you're all familiar with. You may not know that you are, but you are. You saw the movie Top Gun. I have some news for Tom Cruise. excuse me, that airplane he was having the dogfight with, it's not a MiG. And do I sound confident? excuse me, I've got over 100 missions in it. And it's not a MiG, but it's real fast. Excuse me, the throat's not happy. Sorry, I had cancer in my throat. This is all scar tissue now. And I'm on a liquid diet. I came to you on liquid diet. It's just a different liquid. But sometimes the scar tissue is unhappy. Anyway, this thing is a high-performance airplane. That means afterburning jet engines faster than the speed of sound. Take the runway in this airplane, lock the brakes, lock the canopy, run up to what we call military power. It's everything short of afterburner. Roll for a couple hundred yards, light the burners. At 155 knots, there's about 170 miles an hour, you think back on the stick. You never move the stick in this airplane. It is so sensitive that when you get in it, you adjust your rudder pedals and your seat height so that your right forearm rests on your right thigh. Because if your arm is up in the air, you're all over the sky. You cannot fly the plane. So at 155 knots, you rotate, which means the nose wheel comes off. And about 165, she flies off. You raise the gear. At 1,000 feet, you raise the flaps, begin to apply forward pressure on the stick because she wants to climb bad. I'm going to hold her level at 1,000 feet till we get to 600 knots and pull up. I'll be level at 40,000 feet 3.5 minutes after taking a runway. This thing has a roll rate of 720 degrees a second. I'll do the math for you. That's 2 times per second. Yeah. Your eyeballs won't track that if you're sober. Trust me, I tried it both ways. And if my sponsor calls, I came here wearing a coat and a tie, okay? But would you take that for me, Pat? I'm about medium rare up here right now. And January don't feel like this in Nashville. Anyway, and a loop is defined as a 360-degree turn through the vertical plane pulling positive Gs. In this airplane, we enter a loop at 10,000 feet at 500 knots. That's 550 miles an hour. Pull up at 5 Gs. I'll tell you what that means. You're pulling 1 G right now. It's the force of gravity. At 1 G, a 200-pound man weighs 200 pounds. At 5 Gs, a 200-pound man weighs 1,000 pounds. That is precisely what that means. Everything on you now weighs times 5. That does include your upper eyelids. You'll be aware of that at 5 Gs, okay? 500 knots, 5 Gs, wings level inverted at 20,000 feet. Took 2 miles vertically to pull over on her back and lose 10,000 feet down the backside. Total lapse time under 25 seconds. Disney does not have that particular ride. And I tell you all that about the airplane for 2 reasons. The first one, of course, is to impress you. Anybody? Yeah. Yeah. We got to get one of those. And the other one is to help you see my alcoholism and maybe yours. We'd done about 5:30 in the afternoon, we're finished. I head to the flight, and I leave the flight line, I head to the officers' club. Now, don't let me confuse you. I used to get drunk intentionally a lot. I'm going out to get drunk tonight. If you're not going out to get drunk, I don't want you along. You're going to be a problem later. You've been out with people like that, haven't you? Yeah, they should do something else. And but did you ever get drunk by accident, like on a night when you're absolutely sure you were not going to get drunk? Who got accidentally drunk? Come on, accidentally drunk. These are my people. Okay. So the reason I'm sure I'm not going to get drunk tonight, you know who the Thunderbirds are, the Air Force demo team? I did not fly with them, but they flew this plane for 7 years. And tomorrow morning, a friend of mine and I are going to do their show, and we can. I'll be number two in a two-ship formation. And as we're breaking ground, as the wheels are coming up, I'll slide up under his tail. And if I can stand up, I can almost touch his afterburner. My airplane is white. When we land, the top foot of my tail will be black from his exhaust. And we're going to be doing 7.5 G's as fast as 700 miles an hour. We're going to be doing things you can't even have nightmares about. Okay? Nobody with a brain would get drunk the night before going to do that. Clearly, you can see that. But I do want to socialize the other pilots of my squad. I think I'll drop by the club and have one no more than? Very good. Now, I noticed some of the elements didn't play. I'd like to encourage you. This is what you heard on the phone. And you believed it again. That's why you have to come to Al-Anon. The ones that ran screaming from guys like me don't have to come to your thing. They don't. So together, now I have one no more than? I should be home by 6:30, no later than? It's good to have a plan. I noticed many of you recognize the plan. We're going to call that Plan A. But what happens is somewhere between the first sip of the whatever's behind the bar, first sip of that one, and the bottom of the second one, I think I changed my mind. Plan B. All right, I didn't change my mind. I got this craving Silk Road talks about. Yeah, but if you've got a craving for being satisfied, you don't even know you have it. So I think I changed my mind. Yeah, Bart, I know what I was going about. I'm going to watch one more quarter of the ball game, set them up again. You know, I tell you what, we'll rack them up with you. Just a couple more games, two more over here, bartender. Think I changed my mind. Don't get home by 7 with two of me. I leave the officers' club at exactly 1 o'clock in the morning because they... Whoa. A lot of pilots here, Will. We'll talk flying. I'll be around. We'll tell some flying stories. I'd love to with you. And drive home drunk with a hand over one eye. We're the one-eye drivers. Yeah. I had a guy, one of our people, you know, they think we're not creative. One of our people, he said he carried a pair of drunk driving glasses in his glove compartment because he was afraid a cop would see him with his hand up. He spray painted one lens black. He just put those babies on. I'm not making this up. And this other guy said he was afraid a cop would see him, so he'd put a piece of duct tape. I wonder what a cop would have thought. This is your gene pool, you know. And so I drive home drunk. I walk in. My first wife rips me a new one. There's a lot of information in that sentence. And I go into the bathroom for my after drinking chores. The questions are going to get harder. Who puked? Come on, pukers. Put them up, pukers. How about out your nose? Who puked out your nose at least once? A lot of the people in the choir have puked out their nose over here. Who quit forever? Nose pukers, put them back up. Come on, if you puked out your nose, you quit forever. I know you did. It didn't stick, you wouldn't be here, but yeah. Who quit forever in front of somebody? You swore to somebody else never again. All right, now I'm from the South. It usually runs about 50%. I'm not sure it'll be here. Who quit forever one hand on the Bible in front of somebody else? Yeah, just a few. See, down South, I'd get half on that easy. Yeah. Who peed in the closet? Did you really? I never did that. I'm very embarrassed for you. I don't believe I'd have told that in public. You might want to talk to your sponsor about the difference between sharing at a meeting and a fifth step. All right. Now, I will admit that my first wife is still angry about that antique coffee table that used to be in the living room. Yeah. And so I was, I thought the two most creative and important inventions of the 20th century, both invented by alcoholics, by the way. One was that little half moon shape of carpet to put around a commode for you to kneel on. That was invented by one of our people. You know, knees all torn up from that hard bathroom floor. We ought to put it. And that soft commode seat you could rest your head on in between heaves. Remember that? It's not as cold as a porcelain, but they're real soft. Those were nice. And I'm in there puking up my guts and quitting forever. Always quit forever. And quitting drinking is not difficult. I've done it over 2,000 times. It's not hard. I've been collecting pre-AA prayers, and I'm going to share a couple of the minor league ones with you, and then we'll do the big one together. God, please help me pass this test I didn't study for. It's a popular one. Please don't let her be pregnant. I'm told I can be prayed in the first person, ladies. Please don't let those flashing red and blue lights be for me. Now, let me reset the scene for you. Somewhere between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm in the bathroom, kneeling on the prayer rug. And we're at the point of proceedings where there's nothing coming out but noise and an occasional tear. Remember this part? And I would pray the pre-AA prayer. I'm going to do the first line, you do the second. You know the prayer, trust yourself. Are you ready? God, get me out of this, and which is alcoholic for amen, as I'm sure you know. Okay, if you're new here and you're not sure you need to stay, we have a one-question test. Did you know the prayer? The earthlings don't know the prayer. And then I had teeth in. I brushed my teeth and go to bed. It's around 3 in the morning. I get up at 6. Not even hungover yet. I'm in that wonderland between drunk and hungover. And at 7:30, I'm in that airplane. Oh, yeah. And I'm wearing jump boots, a flight suit, a G-suit. Without the G-suit, I'll black out today. Parachute, helmet, oxygen mask, visor. There's a 20-millimeter cannon shell under my seat. It's an ejection seat. This is not a toy airplane. And we light those afterburners, and boom, here we go. And as we break ground, I slide up under his tail, and we get up to about 30, 40,000 feet, and we start doing acrobatics. And I'm dying. I am absolutely dying. By this time, I'm beginning to get to the hangover part. The eyelids are made out of sandpaper. The throat and nasal passages are raw. It feels like the butcher knife. When I got the headache in the exact same place every time. I got a tremor in my hands. I've selected 100% of the oxygen lever. It will not cure a hangover, trust me. I tried it hundreds of times. It won't. And I'm also tight on the leader flying the mission. And what I just described to you, in case you missed it, was willpower. Many of us have a tremendous amount of that, and it is no defense against this disease, none. By 5 o'clock that afternoon, I'm feeling a good bit better. I'm only 22 years old, my body's resilient. I've been eating saltines and drinking whole milk all day. And Alka-Seltzer has a new product out with lemon in it. I've been field testing it for them. I'll tell you one thing I know for sure, I'm not getting drunk tonight. I'm absolutely certain of that, because tomorrow morning I'm going to be number 4 in the 4-ship. It ain't going to be 2 tomorrow, it's going to be 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. There's going to be 4 of us in just a little pile going 700 miles an hour pulling 7.5 G's. Nobody with a brain to get drunk tonight before flying number 4. Do I have to go on, or can you tell this story? I thought so. Yeah, over and over again. And some guys can hit a golf ball 300 yards. I can drive an airplane. I was one of the gifted ones. I didn't earn it. I could just do it. I finished at the top of my class. My next duty assignment, I flew a 4-engine jet all over the world. I have people are saying the world's flat. I flew around it twice in 1 month. Trust me, it's round. I checked twice. I was in Central Southeast Asia. I flew Puff the Magic Dragon, the original side-firing gunship. I was transferred into an intelligence mission. We were flying over Laos. The president was on TV twice a week saying we were not in Laos. This mission is still classified. We weren't supposed to pray about it because God didn't have a high enough security clearance. Man, I'm not proud of what I'm about to tell you, but I was so drunk at 4 o'clock one morning taxiing my plane out, I taxied it off into the grass off the end of the taxiway. If it had been 4 in the afternoon, if there had been a plane taxiing behind mine, if there had been a rock, a ditch, a stump out there, somebody else be with you good people, and I'd still be serving life in a military prison. I'm not trying to impress you at all. Simply tell you that's what alcoholism does to nice people like us. It has us disrespect the things we care the most about and tear the hearts out of the people who love us the most. That's what it does. The disease is greedy. It wants it all, and it'll get it all if I don't do absolutely everything necessary to stop it. And I'm just on call. I'm honorably discharged. At my last duty station, I was an instructor pilot on a four-engine jet with a worldwide mission. I was 26 years old. I resigned my commission. I'm honorably discharged. Got a job as a sales rep in the summer of 1984, kind of fast forward. My boss said to me one day, you're going to treatment right now or you're fired. The man was a great communicator. No, I mean, really, he could, like, explain things. And June 28, 1984, which was my 41st birthday, happy birthday to you, I signed into a little charm school outside of Atlanta, Georgia, to overcorrect for a problem I didn't have. That's how I got here. And we used to hear it all the time. I haven't heard it in a long time. I'm actually what they call tri-addicted. I'm addicted to everything I tried. And let me say also that I could afford it. So I came to you with a snootful. And I didn't sleep the first three nights I was in treatment. I'm laying there the fourth night knowing I'm not going to sleep again. And some of you may recall, if you're not sleeping, you're not drinking, it stays dark for quite a while. It actually goes on all night long. And I'm laying there bored to death, and I don't remember exactly. Lights out at 11, and I got to stay there till 6 in the morning. Short bathroom breaks, that's it, I got to lay there. And what I'm about to tell you happened to me, I didn't do it. But I began to see my life as you might see a series of short movies. The important events. And I've always given myself credit for my intentions. I'm probably the best intended person you're ever going to meet. My favorite one, I do close-up magic. And my favorite was I was going to get a clown suit. And when I was on the road, instead of running to bars and chasing the ladies, I was going to put on my clown suit, take my magic hand into the hospital and do it. You got to admit, it'd take a great guy. I haven't done it yet, by the way. Our third step talks about a decision. The difference between a decision and an intention. Intentions are followed by more intentions. A decision is followed by action. That's the difference. And this night, as I'm seeing my life, I can't see the intentions. They're not there. It's not a pretty story without them. I got to the place where I began to think about the single worst thing I've ever done. I got one stands all alone. And I'd always been able to stop it before. My good Tennessee friend, Jack Daniels, can help me stop that. My friend from around here, Jose Cuervo, he knows how to help with that. Not laying in a bed in a treatment center, they don't. And I reached what I was going to call bottom for the next 30 years. One of the guys I sponsored redefined it for me. But I got to the place where I would have paid anything to get out from under the guilt and the shame and the pain that I was in. It was just all over me. And this is the part that's very difficult to try to explain. But from in my chest, my vocal cords didn't move, my mind did not think this. From in here, screamed, and it was internal, but it was very loud, God forgive me. And what I'm going to tell you all happened in the next instant. There was this magnificent white light all of a sudden shining on just in me and mine, my bed. If you've had x-rays taken of your teeth, when they picked that lead apron up off of you, it felt like one of those was all over me. It flew off of me, and my body felt so light, I thought I was going to float off the bed. It did not scare me. This light had a texture and a warmth, and I could feel the light in every cell of my body, and I was aware of every cell of my body. With my eyes closed, I could see that room in better detail than I can see this one now. There was a partition about a foot behind my head, and it came within about a foot of the ceiling, and the light was all, it was all white, it was all coming from over there, but it was all focused just on me. I've never seen light do that. And what I knew was that God was right there and had the power to forgive me, and I was, I used to say God forgave me then, but I don't speak for God. I don't like being around people that do. I don't know if he ever judged me. I cannot respond. I do know that I received his forgiveness then for the single worst thing I had ever done. And I lay there in the presence of infinite love. I've had the privilege of talking to others who've had experiences similar to this one, who agree when I say what we call time does not exist in that presence. I can't explain that to you either, but I can report it. I also have had a number of people who've had those experiences come to me and say, I had one of those and drank again after it. And I believe them. Because recovery is not an event, it's a process. And that was just a cornerstone. And I think if you didn't get one of those, don't be sad. I think it's because you weren't sick enough to need one. And I mean that. And I think I was close to death and nobody knew it. I was right out over the edge. This is Bill's story, page 12. But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself. I don't speak for Bill either. But I'll tell you, I do not think that that event alone would have gotten me the 39-year chip that's in my pocket right now. It was necessary for me to do the rest. It was just a cornerstone. I had to build on it. And I woke up the next day wanting to be, and I don't know if anything else passed between us that night. I simply can't respond. I do not know. And I don't know how long I lay there because, like I said, time doesn't exist in that presence. But at some point, I must have slept because I woke up the next morning. I had not done that in several days. And I woke up wanting to be one of his guys. And that was my first cornerstone. I zipped through a 28-day treatment program in 6 weeks flat. I've always picked things up quickly. And came back to Nashville where the only person I knew in the city was in recovery. It was one of my customers, and I didn't want him to know. If you don't recognize that, that's newcomer thinking, terminal case. I'm going to die from what's going on right in here if I don't get some help with it. I didn't know that. Set out to follow their aftercare plan. I had one counselor in one session convinced me I had to do it all. And I was able to go back years later and thank him for that. And they said 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to 87, two of them I just can't remember. One night I'm about to leave for the meeting, my son fell and hurt himself. Put him in the car and went to the emergency room. And that was the right thing, we all know that. And I thought if you missed, you just missed. Because I can't figure out all by myself that you could possibly go to two meetings in a day. I have this minor case of terminal newcomer thinking. And stay from the old Playmates and Playgrounds. My favorite bar in Nashville is on 8th Avenue. And I had a 2-year chip in my pocket the next time my car was on 8th Avenue. And I'm not kidding. I refused to turn onto the street for over 2 years. I'm not playing with you. I'm going to give you the two best kept secrets. I hate to do this when I'm being recorded. The two best kept secrets in AA. Here's the first one. The directions on how to do a four-step have been very cleverly concealed in the pages of this book. That information had not quite gotten to that particular treatment center. And I completed their true, false, multiple choice, fill in the blank, do you still hate your mother, alleged four-step. And I called down to the treatment center to Bernie. He was not my counselor. I had the big white light experience. I see that fifth step confession coming. I have to tell somebody the truth. Who to tell? Bernie is a perfect choice. He's a counselor at the treatment center, and you can look at him until he's stoned out of his gourd. Although you know what it looks like, right? His face is real relaxed. He got this dumb grin when he walks. He just kind of shuffles. You know what it looks like. So I asked. He said, sure. So I called down there, and he said, yeah. I drove down and did my fifth step with Bernie, which is where I began to get relief. If I'd been doing the actual steps, they'd be the ones out of this book. With an actual sponsor, that's one who's already done them out of this book. I would have gotten relief before them. As an aside, Bernie was not actually stoned. He was sober over 20 years. That was serenity. I didn't know what it looked like. Because I have this minor case of terminal newcomer thinking. And anyway, at about 5 months, I've done everything on the aftercare list except get a sponsor. And I was so insane, I was looking for a sponsor I could relate to. I think it may be the single dumbest thing I've ever done in my whole life. I mean, I can't figure out if you go to two meetings in a day, who can I relate to? Whoa, I can relate to the next squirrel that has no idea what's going on, who I can relate to. Thank God I didn't find it. We'd both be dead by now. But there was this guy in this meeting. And when he talked, the voices in my head shut up. He made perfect sense. We're graduates of the same university. Would you sponsor me? So, well, we'll see. Here's your first assignment. Assignment? I thought a sponsor like a new best friend. Going to introduce me around, show me some of the better meetings, maybe loan me some money, fix my wife. We don't have time to dawn to talk about all the things I was wrong about when I got here. Here's your first assignment. Don't have time tonight. Ask me later. I'll be glad to tell you what it was. It took me a week. Jerry, I did the assignment, sponsor me. He said, I'll sponsor you my way. Sometime during that week, he had gone to the Nashville Zoo, and he had gotten a transfusion of tiger blood. And what happened to that nice guy asked to sponsor me, I have no idea. But he was gone. And he said, you are too sick to stay sober on the fellowship of AA. You will need the program also. I had no idea what he was talking about. And he gave me the number one best kept secret in all of AA, which is the definition of the program. Now, the way we keep it secret is we read it at most of the meetings. It's on page 59, right before step one, where it says, here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a no steps, no program. The steps are not part of the program. I'll give you a definition of insanity. Is thinking you're in a 12-step program and not actually taking all 12. I would propose, if you haven't taken all 12, you're not in a 12-step program, and you're spending Friday night with me and these people, you need some kind of help. Anyway, he scared me. And he scared me so bad the truth jumps out of me. I don't know about you, but I save the truth for emergencies. I don't spread it around real thick. And I said, Jerry, I don't want to do the 12 steps. He said, that's okay. I said, oh, good. He said, as long as you do them. Jerry, I don't think we're communicating. Yeah, we're. I've been hearing the word willingness. Yes, well, here's the definition. I believe willingness, bottom, and surrender all have the exact same definition. It's when someone who's qualified, sponsor in this case, asks me to do something I don't like, that I don't think will help, that I don't want to do, and I do it anyway. It is that do it anyway. It is that do it anyway that defines willingness, bottom, and surrender. That is the piece. So I didn't like how this was going, so I hit him with my Sunday punch. I said, why? Oh, yeah, there's a lesson coming here. And he said, I don't answer why questions to the men I sponsor. And the reason is why is a management question. The first step says you're not in management. So all the questions begin with why have the exact same answer. And the answer is you don't need to know. And I hated that when he said it. Today I embrace it. It's one of my cornerstones. Because all of a sudden it was not knowing that made me crazy. Incorrect. It was needing to know that was making me crazy. And when I was able to lay down the need to know, I got peaceful. From a position of peace, I began to know. And the knowing isn't worth anywhere near as much as the peace. I didn't know that at the time. But he said, I'm feeling kind of generous today, Sparky. I'm going to give you a free one. The reason you got to do this is because the alcohol and those other things you're doing are not your problem. What? They're not your problem. They're your answer. Make you taller, smarter, better looking, all that stuff. If that hadn't done so much for you, it could have never done anything to you. It couldn't have. And he said, our program is kind of like going to the dentist. We've got to drill before we can fill. Like the dentist, we got Novocaine. Here we call it sponsorship, fellowship, home group, love. It's not near as hard as the way you've been living. Not near as hard. I'm saying why every time the man takes a breath. And this is where he got me. This is where I came to tell you tonight. He said, think of yourself as a garbage can. I got that, Jerry. What we're going to do with these steps is we're going to dump you out. We're going to scrub the can nice and clean, and we're going to stand it back up. We're going through your life, and most of it's garbage, and we're going to toss it. Portions are good. For example, do you love your kids? I said, a lot. He said, wonderful. We'll keep that. We finish these steps, you're going to be a big, empty, clean can with just a little good stuff in the bottom. And the reason is, one of these days, something heavy is going to slam into your heart. He said, your father's going to die. And on that day, you've got a little good stuff in the bottom, but on that day, if you don't have that big, empty, clean space to store that pain in, while we love you back to spiritual health, you will escape. And the only escapes you know are killing you and tearing the hearts out of the people that love you. And I ran out of why. And I allowed a man to coach me through the 12 steps. And I got what I think is the most powerful promise in the book. It's the first line on page 60. It says 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result. Here it read, a result's not what it says. A is one of several, one of many. The is singular. Promise me one thing as the result. It's a spiritual awakening. It's been my experience. Spiritual awakening. Alcoholics do not drink beverage alcohol, and they don't ever get thirsty. And that's the magic. If you're new, I don't think our mission here is to change you so you never drink again. It's to change you so you never want to again. And that's what this thing is about. And I don't think I'd have believed that when I was new, but I sure believe it now because it's been my experience. And I should tell you before I tell you this piece that my daughter is doing just fine. I chatted with her yesterday. A few years ago, it would have been in 1990, I was sober 6 years. I found her in a pool of blood in her bed. She had fired a pistol into her mouth the night before. And I don't usually tell this part of it, but I dropped to my knees. Y'all had done so much with me. And I looked up and I said, God, if it's your will to take her, take her. If it's your will for her to stay here a mess, okay. If it's your will for her to recover, okay. I'm not holding myself up as a shining example. Those who know me absolutely know I'm not. But what I was able to do was hold the most precious thing in my life in an open hand to a God who is worthy of that and say, take her if you will. And we rushed to Vanderbilt Hospital. For the first 4 days, they said, this is a successful suicide. She's just not gone yet. You'll bury her this week. And I'm sitting on my baby's bed, and I'm holding her hand. She's a nightmare to look at. She's got a feeding tube, a breathing tube. She can't talk. She can squeeze your hand once for yes and twice for no. She don't want to die anymore. And 4 days is a long time. The man that came to you in the summer of 1984 was probably capable of first-degree murder, and it didn't have to happen. And let me tell you what did happen. Sometime over those first few days, I went home and packed a bag and moved into Vanderbilt Hospital. And so did you. There wasn't a time, I stayed there 60 days. I'd never left the campus of Vanderbilt Hospital 60 days. And there was not a time in that next 60 days that wasn't a member of my home group closest I am to Jason right here. 24 hours a day for 60 full days. You can pretend to care. You can't pretend to show up. And you guys showed up. Don't tell me. I'm a word merchant. Show me. Boy, did you show me. And it wasn't to keep me from drinking. They never talked about it. I had been taught to cry by a member of my home group, a pretty famous guy. I was watching him in meetings sober about 2 years, and I finally said, look, tell me about the tears. He said, somebody says something beautiful, touches my heart, and I weep. I said, I can't cry. I haven't cried since 1967, 68. And he said, I'll teach you, and he did. And I can't cry on command, but boy, if it comes tonight, you're going to see it. I wouldn't take anything from my tears. And you guys were there in case I needed to cry at 3 a.m, one of my people would be there to hold me. Powerful thing. And my daughter's fine. She's doing just fine. Two of the men I sponsor have had their only son killed. And one of them was national news for over 2 years. I didn't think we were ever going to get to the end of it. And we did that with them. Had the privilege of doing that with them, doing the all-night thing. It's really something. I moved out of the home my first wife and I were living in when I was sober 6 years. She used to control me with my guilt, and I was guilty. And I went through the 12 steps. I got my innocence back. And she couldn't control me anymore, and it was very difficult for her. And she was standing there screaming at me one more time. I got this moment of clarity. And what I realized was, I'm just before hitting her in the face with a fist. And when she goes down, I'm going with her. She's on the way to the hospital. I'm on the way to the jail. It's a bad plan. I worked it out all by myself. It was a good thing. Wasn't anybody else there. And I did an about face while she was still screaming and got in the car and drove away, got a newspaper, got the one ad, started looking for an apartment, and 48 hours later I moved. It was imminent. I was going to hit her. She wasn't going to quit that, and she was going to push that button too hard one time, and it was going to be bad, real bad. I didn't know what to do. I didn't believe in divorce, and yet I knew if I stayed with her, she was going to push it hard enough. And I went to old-timers. I said, what should I do? And they said, turn it over. I said, how? I got no answer. Believe what you like. I went to the source, and this is what I got. What is it that I turn over? The answer is the result. How do I do that? One, I stand today where God is. There's one who has all power, the one who is God, may you find him now. I stand today where he is. And two, I operate within his principles. I get out of the motive business. Page 60 in the book makes it extremely clear I can't trust my motives. Principle always trumps motive. That's why step 12 does not say and had good motives in all our affairs. But the other thing I got, and I want to share this, was three prayers. Prayer number one, God, if it's your will for us to be together, put us together. Prayer number two, if it's your will for us to be apart, put us apart. Those are the easy ones. Here's a big one. God, if it's your will for me not to know today, please leave me not knowing. That's the one. To get into today and simply stay here. And if he doesn't want me to know today, I'm asking not to know. And I was able to pray that prayer and mean it every day for about 10 months. And then one morning I knew. And that was the end of that. But that prayer has been worth so much to me. If it's his will for me not to know today, I don't want to know. Hardest assignment I've ever been given is one day at a time. And I blew that off. Yeah, don't drink today. Yeah, it absolutely means that. It also means live only in this day. My feet are much smarter than my mind. My feet are right here, right now. My mind will head off into the past, reliving victories, some of which may have actually happened. Or off into the future, trying to figure it all out. Plan A and Plan B and Plan C. And what if they find us? And I'm rarely between the claps, right here, right now. Recognize that? And just to be right here, right now. Right here, right now. And I believe all the good questions contain the word today. And all the good answers contain the word today. And the question isn't, what am I do about my finances? That's the wrong question. The question is, what do I do about my finances today? What do I do about my relationship? No. What do you do about it today? Feel the difference in those questions? I got to quit trying to fix the rest of my life. I'm no good at it. If I was any good at fixing the rest of my life, I would not be here with you nice people. I'd fix the rest of my life and go on my merry way. I was diagnosed with cancer in my throat in 20. The first thing I did was take my teeth, as I'm sure you've noticed. They can't fit me with dentures, but it doesn't matter because I'm on the liquid diet. They did so much radiation to my throat, it's all scar tissue. My epiglottis is buried in scar tissue, and it's not trustworthy. And I live on chocolate and sugar. But don't feel sorry for me, because I got choices. I can either look at the fact I'm on liquid diet the rest of my life, or I can look that I get to live the rest of my life. I have made my choice. Don't. Now, I'm not going to be out there watching you eat. You're not going to see me at dinner. I dream about food two or three nights a week, but I'm at peace about it. Man, I wouldn't take anything for simply being at peace. But this one day at a time thing, to stay focused right here, right now, is where the magic is. I ask a question. Right this moment, I mean, a lot of things going on in a lot of lives, but right this moment, is everybody okay? Nod if you're okay. All right, great. How about now? How about now? Yeah. to get right here, right now. It's where the magic is. Yeah, so many things went flying through. I'm sorry, some of those didn't stay. So many other things I would like to talk about. We talked in the first meeting today. By the way, the workshops were absolutely spectacular. Y'all were It is a crime against humanity that that was not recorded. It really is. That was spectacular. But we talked about fellowship in that first AA meeting this morning. And I have craved fellowship all my life. I've never had it. I was the president of my fraternity in college. I was talking about flying that classified mission in Southeast Asia. There were 10 flight crews. I was pilot in command of my crew. I had a co-pilot, a navigator, and an engineer. There were multiple co-pilots, navigators, and engineers bugging the men on my crew to trade so they could fly with me. And I never felt like I belonged. And I bet you understand that. And I was been with you for a while when I realized why. It's because the mask can't participate in fellowship. It can appear to be there, but it can't participate. Only this part can participate, and I ain't showing it to you. Because I'm convinced if you can see me like I see me, you'll feel about me like I feel about me, and I think I'm garbage. And clearly a bunch of together people like you wouldn't have a defective mind like me around if you knew. And that's why I was on red alert all the time trying to hold up the right mask. I've got hundreds of personalities I haven't even used yet. And I don't think I'm gonna have to. Because when I come here and show you this part, when I come here and be real with you, I get to participate in a fellowship. Now, I am in a phenomenal fellowship. I've got a number one problem in my life today. Actually, I should probably share that with you. Number one, biggest problem I've got, deal with it every day of my life. My number one problem is I've got more spectacular people in my life than I have time for. I cannot work them all in. I'll tell you something else that's been kind of fun too. And my buddy Joe Krogan, if you don't know that name, get one of his talks. Krogan calls these things postcards from God. I'm going to ask for a show of hands. Who's had the experience where somebody asked you a question and the moment before they asked you didn't know the answer? And you open your mouth and not BS, but a piece of the great golden truth falls out. And 3 hours later, you can't remember what it was. Who's had that one? How, put them way up. Look around. Look at this. Yeah. Yeah. Boy, would that be a fabulous book if we could put that together. I'll share a couple of mine. I was one of the guys I sponsor called me one day, rah, 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 this guy in my home group. And I heard myself say, isn't one of our assignments to learn to love the unlovable? And Hannah and I both said, wow, I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that. And I just had this one the other day. I believe in the prayer thing on the forgiveness, which that was a great workshop too, ladies and gentlemen. And this guy I was sponsoring about a year ago, he said, okay, I finished. I can pray for all of them and mean it. I said, fantastic, we'll move on. He says, no. He said, I'm afraid they might come back or I might get some more. And I heard myself say, stop solving problems you don't have. I think that ought to be on the wall next to Easy Does It. Trapped up in here all the dadgum time. Don Pritz was one of my great teachers. If you don't know that name, your education is badly lacking if you don't know what I'm talking about here. But he never sponsored me, but he was my spiritual advisor for 20 years. And I could call him with any question. I could call him a question nobody can touch, and he answers right now. And it's principle-based every time. Never motive, always principle. He was just that guy. And I had the privilege of spending his last Thanksgiving with him, and we all knew that's what it was. There wasn't any question about it. And sitting across the little coffee table, our wives were right here. They didn't see it happen. And I was finally able to ask him a question that's been scaring me for a very long time. I said, Don, what are guys like Scott going to do when guys like Don are all gone? And he cupped his hands like this, and he looked at me, and he said, I have been bringing you hands full of water. Go to the river. And that was the answer. What he said was that he had access to power and the wisdom vastly beyond his own, that he believes available to me, and I believe it's available to everybody here. I'm gonna take you flying one more time. My last flight in a high-performance airplane, I was pretty sure it was the last time I'd ever light afterburners, and it has turned out to be. And I was flying out of South Georgia, and 3.5 minutes later, I leveled at 40,000 feet. Jacksonville Center gave me what they call a barrel. It's a 30-mile circle around a point on the ground with an altitude block. Because if you're going to play at 9/10 of the speed of sound, they have to give you some room. It's one of the rules. And they gave me 18,000 feet to 60. If there are any pilots in the room, you recognize those numbers. What they don't know is the Air Force tells me on a regular basis not to exceed 45,000 feet in that airplane. The reason is there are things that can happen in the very thin air at ultra-high altitude you will not recover from. Let me define not recover. That's a spin, crash, burn, die, and owe them an airplane. That's not recover. But I was young and immortal, and I wondered how high it would go. I came back out of afterburner. If you run the afterburners at high altitude, it gets really quiet when the engines quit, because they're gonna. So I'm in what they call military powers, everything short of burner. I'm doing 9/10 of the speed of sound, right at 700 miles an hour. Pulled the nose up a little bit, rolled in about 15 degrees back to stay in the circle, and started climbing. The answer to the question is 52,300. If she'd gone to 52.8, it would have been 10 miles, right? 52.80? It wouldn't do the other 500 feet. And I described the controls. Now I can do this at that altitude and nothing happens, because there's just barely enough wind coming over the wings at that speed, at that altitude, to keep her flying. I rolled out on north. That was just part of the gift. And I looked up for the first time. I'd done an instrument climb. I had not looked outside. I looked up. I'm 100 miles west of Jacksonville out over the panhandle. It's 9 o'clock in the morning on a clear day. The sun is coming up over my right shoulder. Through a clear canopy, the sky above me is black. I don't mean dark blue, black. I look out to the west and I saw the curvature of the earth. And I didn't see it a little bit, I saw it. God, I'll have to tell this story because I see it again. This thing we're riding is blue, it's round, it's floating in space, and I claim it's held there by love. I didn't see anything else. And I had a physical sensation like something warm had been poured over me and ran down me like wax down a candle. In the poem High Flight, the author says, I put out my hand and touched the face of God. I did that morning. I sat there and looked at eternity for a minute, maybe. Not long. I mean, there's a lot of risk involved in that. And brought the throttles back very carefully and came down, shot one approach and landed. And I may be the town drunk. I ain't the village idiot. I don't tell them I just broke the law by over a mile vertically. Didn't quite get around to telling them about that. And you can't do something like that and not want to do it again. And in 2004, my little business had a pretty good year. I went up to National International. I chartered a Learjet. And I put wife number two and two kids in the back of the Learjet. A Lear will go to 51,000 feet. Would you like to know how I know that? Would you like to know what you can see from 51,000 feet on a clear day? That's right. That's exactly right. And I'm planning to see the curvature of the earth again. Aren't you? Aren't you? We serve a big God. I'm learning to dream big. I think that's part of the assignment, is to learn to dream big. I think that's part of it. I want to close with the directions to get to that river that Don talked about, with the most important thing I've said tonight. Two things before I do that. One, we invited God, and I'm pretty sure he came. I'd like to acknowledge that. I frequently forget it. Also, I want you to know that I tied it. And that the socks go with it. The most important thing I've said tonight, and I think the most important thing's ever been said in an AA meeting. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. God, I love you so much. Thank you.